Sometimes in the early days of April, when winter is reluctant to give up its grip and you yearn for something a little more spring-like, you can get a huge dose of spring by coming to the Butterfly Conservatory. They have them all over the United States. But this one here at the American Museum of Natural History is a place to go and be surrounded by flying creatures that evolved on our planet millions and millions of years ago. Butterflies.
This one is called an owl butterfly because it has these eye spots.
Oh, look at it on his head.
Oh, gosh.
Guys.
Now, most of the exhibits and rock fossils at the famous Natural History Museum don't move. But just upstairs from the butterflies, there are some flying fossils. Hey, that's me, a fossilized radio host.
Oh, boy, I'm going to die there. Yep. All right, so I keep myself back, flap a little bit, maybe get a little altitude here. All right, let's come down and see if we can get a fish.
I'm flying over a Triassic landscape in a really cool pterosaur simulator where you can experience flight from the perspective of a flying reptile, a pterosaur. If you call them dinosaurs here at this exhibit, you will get a talking to from Dr. Mark Norell, chair of the museum's Division of Paleontology, and Dr. Alexander Kellner, an associate professor at the Museo Nacional in Brazil. Forget dinosaurs here, they say. Dr. Kellner, in particular, has spent his life looking at these 60 to 200 million-year-old winged fossils.
It's definitely my life's work. I wanted to study pterosaurs when I was really a kid. I didn't even know the name pterosaur. I was also very, very lucky because when I started my career as a geologist at the Federal University in Rio, I came across some bones. And I remember when I was bringing those bones to the professor, to paleontology professor at the time, he kind of said, oh, those could be mosasaurs, which are marine reptiles. And I said, yeah, sure. They could be dinosaurs. And yeah, great. But when he said they could be pterosaurs, my eyes just, you know, I was very excited about it. And after that, I met the most important vertebrate paleontologist at that time in Brazil, Jorge Almeida Campos. And in less than 2 seconds, he told me, those are pterosaurs. And I was already fascinated. How does he know? Now I know. It's because of the thickness of the bone. They're very thin, bald bones. So,
just their bones are so fragile that they make really bad fossils. The typically things that have, you know, big teeth or very hard bones, they make good fossils. But pterosaurs, even the giant pterosaurs, would have bones that are only a couple millimeters thick so that they're broken up and destroyed really quickly.
The learning that will take place at this exhibit, I mean, it's certainly about what are pterosaurs, but it's also what are they not? What are pterosaurs not?
Pterosaurs are not dinosaurs. They're closely related to dinosaurs, but each one went their own evolutionary path. So that's one of the things. They are reptiles, they're flying reptiles that are closely related with dinosaurs, but they are a group on its own.
The kind of confusing thing about it all is that people say, well, what is the closest living relative of pterosaurs? And it's birds, because birds are a kind of dinosaur. But flight is totally independent in each group, and the way in which the architecture of the wing, everything else, is completely different.
What did they eat? How did they compete with the huge dinosaurs that we know from, you know, all the movies and growing up as a kid and having the little plastic models?
I mean, we know some were plant eaters. We know some ate fish. We know that some were insect eaters, for instance. So just like birds have varied diets today, these animals would have also.
There are very few specimens with stomach content. So we infer that based on their teeth, on their skull. So, for example, the insect-eating dinosaurs that Mark was just mentioning, like Eholoptera, they tend to have a very broad skull with very few teeth. But if you see Pterodaustro, which is a pterosaur from Argentina that has very filamentous teeth, very, very many, many, hundreds of teeth, and so it was eating very similar, in a similar way like flamingos do today.
So, Velociraptor, that's familiar. Yeah. Tyrannosaurus, of course, that's familiar. Give me the species names for some of your favorite pterosaurs, Alex.
It's very difficult actually to pick, but I would say that one of the most interesting ones from Brazil would be Thalassodromus, which is portrayed in a diorama in this exhibit. And from America would be Down Draco. We have this really very, very nice cast of this almost complete pterosaur from North America.
Was it an advantage for them evolutionarily, pterosaurs, to be able to fly?
Oh, definitely. I mean, because it's just why birds are so diverse. It's just that all of a sudden you're able to fly, it opens up a whole new set of different ecologic opportunities to be of things to eat, of availability of food, of the availability to travel over long distances. So the origin of flight is pretty unique, and that's the reason that, you know, if we look at birds today, that there's at least 10,000 different species of birds. That's over twice the number of species of mammals that are in existence. But even of mammals, the most diverse group of mammals is bats, and they're able to fly.
And I would like to add to that, if you think about the evolutionary history of pterosaurs, so far we know something around 200 named species, of which some around 150 are considered valid. And the time period that they lived is roughly around 160 million years. So you have only about one species each million year. So this tells us that there have been much more pterosaurs around that we don't know of yet.
So could you guys recreate, before we go, the debates that are going on in the pterosaur community, the famous bipedal, quadrupedal? That one's over. What are the debates today? What are the arguments today?
Most of the debates now are how they took off is a big one. Another debate is how far they could fly without sitting back down again. The only real way to figure out what something ate is to find a dead one with something inside of it. So all these other inferences that we make about pterosaurs on the basis of their teeth, their jaws, their musculature are just inferences. And there's a lot of disagreement about what some of these animals ate. So it comes down to basic ecological kinds of things.
And one other is how actually they look like externally. We have found some pterosaurs that show some fibers, which we are calling pycnofibers. Pterosaur hair on the quotation mark. And if I could make a wish, what would I like to find? And that would be a small, tiny piece of pterosaur preserved in amber that would give us so much information about those creatures. That would be really tremendously interesting.
So you're looking for pterosaur lint.
Yeah.
That would change your life. Where do you come down on the pterosaur fur thing? Do you think for sure? Is it completely made up? Do you guys agree on this?
I think 100%. Sure. We have great fossils that have that way. And some people would say, well, how do you know they all had it that way? Well, for 99% of all the, more than 99% of all the fossil mammals that have ever been found, there's been no hair found on them. But you don't have a problem putting hair on them because other mammals have hair. Well, the best preserved pterosaur fossils we have preserve these pycnofibrils, which I think are the homologous to feathers, but Alex and I disagree on that.
But
at the same time...
But we have a way to resolve it, Mark, and yeah. I just pointed out to him, we just need to take those so-called proto-feathers, put them through a scanning electron microscope or trying to find different ways, do the same with pterosaurs, and then we would know.
So we're but just externally, one grant for an electron microscope study.
Yeah. Anyway, this would be an interesting thing. Okay, let's do it, Mark.
That's Alexander Kellner, an associate professor at the Museu Nacional in Brazil, and Dr. Mark Norell, chair of the museum's Division of Paleontology. They were gracious enough to give us a tour of the Pterosaurs, Flight in the Age of Dinosaurs exhibit at the Natural History Museum here in New York. It will be on view until January 4th of 2015.